We're full of amazing features today. This one is also great. This is the original iMac. It's CD-ROM drives. Great, very reliable, work well. But we wanted to make it better. We wanted to make it more consumer friendly. We wanted to make it more reliable. And so every new iMac has a built-in slot load CD-ROM. This is incredible.
Hello, and welcome to the CoolCast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Airfun Elijah. Joining me today, he once did an entire bag of drugs that Buster Heine found in a Moscone West garbage can. Leander Caney is here. That was a ginormous bag, too. Yeah, do you remember that bag?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Only vaguely?
Well, vaguely, yeah.
My memory serves me correctly. You didn't actually do it. Buster, he was a good Samaritan. He turned it in.
Oh, that bag of drugs.
You had no recollection of what I'm talking about.
Oh, my God, you're right. It was a huge bag of drugs. Yeah, it was on top of a trash can, wasn't it? And they were all weird.
It wasn't on top of the trash can. I think it was in the trash can.
Well, how did he... I don't think he was digging through the trash.
If only we had Buster here. Buster's internet crapped out, so he couldn't join the show. But this is a true story. So we were at Macworld, what was this, like 2 or 3 years ago? And Buster texts me. And he says, I found a bag of drugs in the trash can. And I was like, wow, like a bag of drugs? What kind of drugs? And he's like, I'm coming to you now. And he comes into the press room and he holds up like the biggest bag of drugs I have ever seen. It was like one of those gallon bag freezer bags of like yellow and white and pink capsules.
Yeah, every kind of capsules and pills.
That's right. And I was like, where did you get that bag of drugs? And is there anything good in there? And he said that it was kind of like half sticking out of the garbage can. So he reached in and found this big bag of drugs. And if I remember correctly, didn't you do like several of the drugs? And you're like, no, these aren't any good.
I searched them up. They were all like psychoactive drugs, I think. They were like antidepressants. And,
oh, that's right. You searched for them on your phone or something.
Yeah, some drug forum, yeah.
So nothing exciting. So Leander Caney passed. He was pulling them out one capsule at a time. He's like, no, this isn't what you want. This isn't the good stuff.
Yeah.
Really, these need to be the green pills. So it's just going to be mano a mano this episode, me and Leander. But we have got a good show for you guys this week. We are going to be talking about a pretty big departure from the Apple Design Studio. Daniel Koster has left. He is moving on to another position. If you don't know who he is, he is pretty important, and we'll tell you why this may matter. And also, Leander has a theory on why Johnny Ive has been being chauffeured about. If you didn't know about this, when did he stop driving his own car, Leander?
Well, it sounds like a good 18 months ago now.
Okay. And all of a sudden, he's being chauffeured about in what, like a Bentley or something?
Yeah.
Is it actually a Bentley? It's something nice.
It's a Bentley, yeah. It's a Bentley. I don't know how you pronounce it.
I don't either.
Mustang.
I don't have enough money to even know how to say it.
It's a super nice one. It's a $300,000 at least. You know, base price, supercar.
I doubt it's a base model, too.
Right. Yeah. This thing can be tricked out with all kinds of stuff.
So you have an interesting theory on why this is happening, and we'll be talking about that. Also, if you stay tuned to the end, we're going to be doing an all-new What We're Into, and I was telling Leander my What We're Into this round is a little weird. I've gotten into something that I find a little peculiar. And we'll be talking about that. I'm actually slightly embarrassed to even talk about it, but we're going to do that anyway.
Okay.
Before we dive into the conversation, let me go ahead and say thank you to FreshBooks for supporting this episode. Here's a question for all you entrepreneurs out there running your own business. If you started this very minute, how much time would it take you to catch up on all your client invoices, organize your receipts, and figure out which clients owe you what and when? just the idea of trying to work all that stuff out is overwhelming. I know I've done it before myself. If it is to you, then you need to give FreshBooks a try. FreshBooks is a dead simple cloud accounting software made for entrepreneurs and small business owners who want to take the work out of managing their paperwork. There are over 5 million users now using FreshBooks who are effortlessly creating and sending invoices in seconds. There's no formatting, no formulas, no fuss, no mess. You can also snap photos of your receipts with your iPhone and watch FreshBooks manage your expenses for you. You can even set up your FreshBooks to import your expenses directly from your bank. So the next time you use your debit card for a meal or a tank of gas, it's automatically and instantly recorded in FreshBooks. You can try FreshBooks out right now, free for 30 days. Head on over to FreshBooks.com/cultcast. Enter cultcast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. I love FreshBooks. I pay for FreshBooks every single month. It's one of those critical tools for business that I think everyone who has a business should be using. FreshBooks.com/cultcast. I want to thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode. Oh, and also, if you haven't given Cult Cloth a shot, I invite you to do so at cultcloth.co. Cult Cloth is the best way that I have found to keep your Mac, your iPad, your iPhone, your Apple Watch, your lenses, your sunglasses, sparkling clean. These things destroy dirt, oil, grime, grease, and leave nothing behind but sparkling glass, metal, and plastic. In fact, Adam Christensen from the MacCast, he just picked Cult Cloth as his thing of the week not too long ago. Unbeknownst to me, I didn't ask him to do it, didn't pay him to do it, although I was very appreciative. And of course, we had a huge influx of orders at that time. We just got restocked. We were out of some stuff. And I invite you to check out the testimonials page that we just launched that display all the things that people are saying about their Cult Cloth. You can hear it from our customers in their own words. That's cultcloth.co. Use code CULTCAST at checkout. You'll get a free 8x8 Cult Cloth with your order. And our 12x12 clean cloths are the perfect way to keep your new iPad Pro sparkling clean, just like the day you bought it. That's how we do. Cultcloth.co. Alrighty, Leander, where should we start? Oh, we got to start here. Hold on a sec. I missed my opportunity to give a shout out last week, a very special shout out. Listener Reese Grundy, he pinged me on Twitter and said, can you please give a shout out to my son Alfie Grundy, on your next CultCast show. He's 4. Leander, he's 4 years old, and he loves the show.
Cool.
I'm not sure if a 4-year-old should be listening to this show.
But still, we're glad we're catching him young. Thanks for listening, Alfie.
Yeah, Alfie, what's up, man? What a cool name. That's such a great long-lost name. And you know, when he's older, hopefully people will just call him Alf. You know, like the fun-loving alien who likes to eat cats. Did you ever watch Alf?
No, I think I know what you mean.
You missed out big time. Okay. Shout out to Alfie. Shout out to Reese Grundy. Let's talk about Daniel Koster, Leander.
Mm-hmm.
A, who is this guy?
Let's start there. Yeah, okay. So he's one of the oldest members. That's probably not a good way to put it. He's a veteran member of the design team. So he was
like one of the most senior members.
Yeah, right. And you know, because the design team is super secretive, right? And nothing really much is known about him. And I didn't know who the members were until I started like researching the Johnny Ive book that I wrote that came out a couple of years ago. So anyway, there was when Johnny Ive got hired. When he was a mere young man himself, there was a whole rash of designers that got hired around the same time. Some a little bit before Johnny Ive, some a little bit afterwards. But there's a core group of about 19, and I would say a good half a dozen of those, 10 to 12, were hired around that time and have been there forever. And they are the heart of this team that Johnny Ive put together. And of course, you know, they're responsible for, you know, the iMac, iPhone, iPad, every other hit product, a string of, you know, one after the other hit product.
I mean,
after
all
hit product.
All of Apple's products, right? I mean, they're responsible for
Responsible for all of them. And of course, you know, the dynamic was is that when Jobs came back, you know, he went over to the design studio. He was going to fire Johnny Ive. He was clearing house. He was getting rid of almost, you know, of everybody.
Really?
He wanted to pair the company back, yeah. And they had been set up off-site, you know, a little way from Apple's campus in this building that was, you know, near Apple's original HQ on Banley Drive. But anyway, it was out of the way, you know, and they had no power, really. You know, Apple had grown, but when Jobs had been away, Apple had grown to this big, you know, dysfunctional company that was doing everything, printers, scanners, Newtons, all. You had to have a spreadsheet to figure out what kind of computer you wanted to get. And of course, Windows 95, when it came out, it was you know, that was when Microsoft really nailed it and really had a good, you know, Mac-like system that was good enough for most businesses. And, you know, that really put Apple into trouble. And they went from being the biggest computer maker in the country to being really, really on the ropes. You know, their market just died overnight. And this, of course, is when they bought Jobs back. To cut a long, long story short, he went over there to the studio. He was going to fire everybody. But he saw this studio filled with all these crazy prototypes. And at the time, Johnny and his team were experimenting with all that kind of colored plastic. Remember, like, the E-Mate and the handheld. They had all these prototypes of Newtons and all these different see-through colors. And they were making all these kind of crazy speculative designs. There were models everywhere. And Jobs thought it was really cool. And he's like, why isn't this stuff getting made? And, you know, Johnny's, well, because, you know, no one wants to make it. The engineers don't want it. The marketers think it's weird. You know, the one thing they came out with was the 20th anniversary Mac. And that was supposed to be the iMac. That was supposed to be a living room for the computer because it had a nice sound system. And it was something that you would put in the living room and you wouldn't be embarrassed about. Because at the time, the only thing you could get were, like, beige computers. You know, an office computer. And people didn't want to put an office computer in their living room. But, you know, the internet was just starting to take off. And they realized that a computer for the home, you know, would be something that might sell. So they were originally going to design a cheap all-in-one, like the original Macintosh, the 84 Macintosh, that people could put in their homes. It turned into this, like, giant albatross, you know, like a huge project that was screwed up at every single stage. And then even at the very end, when the you know, Apple's executives saw it, they were like, oh, we should charge $10,000 for this thing. You know, we don't want to give this away for a grand. You know, we should be charging 10. We'll make a special anniversary limited edition. And they totally killed it. You know, it became a disaster. And it was like perfectly, it was almost like, you know, emblematic of what was going wrong at Apple. You know, they had, they were doing everything wrong. Anyway, so Jobs comes back. And what happened is he empowered the design team. All of a sudden, I mean, not all of a sudden, it took him years. It took him 10 years to sort of change the culture of the company, which was engineering driven. It was always started with the engineers. They would say, okay, we're going to put this chip with this, you know, these chips and this hardware, put it in a box, make it look pretty. And that's where the power was. And with the marketers too, who would sort of decide, this is going to be for business people, this is going to be for small businesses, this is going to be for home users, this is going to be for graphic designers. You know, they would sort of decide, they would carve up the market, the different segments. And the engineers would put the hardware together. So, and the dynamic was that at the very last minute, the designers would sort of try to make it look good.
Right.
So, but what Johnny was doing and what he'd been trained to do, you know, as a designer, was to, like, to look at a problem and try to figure out, you know, the best solution for it. So they were coming at the opposite end. You know, they were looking at things like that. You know, what kind of machine would somebody want to put in their living room? So they started with, like, looking at, they hired all these color consultants. And fabric consultants and people who were looking at the at furniture catalogs and things like so they were looking at what IKEA was doing and what companies like that. And they were like, you know, OK, so in next year, people are going to be buying a lot of, like, brown, you know, brown curtains, brown furniture. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the big color trend next year. So this is why they made that 20th anniversary Mac, that kind of weird sort of metallic brown.
Because, oh, was it brown?
Yeah, they were forecasting that this is going to be like a big home design trend. But you can see the kind of thinking they're doing, right? You know, like the same with the iPod and you know, look at the gold phones and the rose gold and all the color and the black and white products and all the different, you know.
And the Apple Watch too, I mean.
Right, exactly.
With all the bands and everything.
That kind of stuff. They're coming from a different, you know, from a completely different angle. They're looking at things like fashion and trends and use cases. You know, what are people going to be using this stuff for? And it's a big, big change in culture. Anyway, Costa was one of the key members of this team. And the other thing
is... So was he there at this time when Steve Jobs came back?
Yeah, they were all there.
It was
they
him
were
and
all
going to
get fired, yeah.
Wow.
And they were set up like a design consultancy with one client. But...
So Apple was their client,
essentially, yeah. But it was like what they did, they didn't run it like an in-house sort of design team. Is you know, six guys in a corner somewhere who no one really listens to, and you know, they were like I said, they would come and they would make stuff look pretty at the end. Bruner, who was the guy who set up the industrial design group, really wanted to sort of change the dynamic. He was the visionary. He was the one who hired Johnny Ive and set up the whole structure that persists today. And it was set up like an outside third party design consultancy, the kind of design specialist like IDEO. Or Pentagram, and a bunch of other different, you know, big famous design houses that operate, you know, on their own. And the clients will go to them and say, look, we want to come out with a new range of like kitchen appliances and we want you to help us design it. And then they would look at, you know, and they would look at the sort of the client's goals, you know, and then try to find a solution then and work with them to come up with a solution, like a line of whatever it is.
Right.
So he wanted this at Apple. He thought it would change it into a design driven company, but they didn't have any power until Jobs came back. And that was one of the big contributions of Jobs, is that, you know, he started with the designers and started hanging out with Johnny Ive all the time. And it was him fighting, you know, he had the power to say, okay, we're not doing it your way anymore. Okay. When, you know, the engineers, you're wrong. I want this, and this is the way I want to do it, you know, because this is what the design group it wants, and this is how we're going to do it. And so he laid down the law. And even with Jobs, you know, it was a battle. And it took it took like a good 10 years to change the culture of the company into a design-driven company.
Yeah.
So anyway, Costa was one of the core members of the team. And the other thing is they all work together as a team. Ive gets all the credit. It's like, oh, I have this and I have that. And Johnny, and Jobs, too, used to get all the credit as well. Like the iPhone was like his idea. He just suddenly dreamt it up. But it was it was the result of, you know, years and years of prototyping and making models of every single thing, all kinds of different ideas. They throw a lot of stuff at the wall. But they'd all work as a group. This is why when you look at the patents, you know, it has a long list of names. Because there would tend to be one lead designer. There'd be one lead guy on each of the big projects. So, you know, the iPhone, the original iPhone, the iPhone, the 3GS, the second one, the third one, the fourth one. Each of them had a different designer who was in charge of it. And he was sort of like the main focal point and would be the one who would sort of like lead the whole thing. But all of the design decisions, every time they had a new button, every time they had a new bezel, every time they had a new case idea, you know, the whole group, they would bring it to the whole group and the whole group would work on it. And this is what they've been doing for years. And so it's a really, really tight-knit group. Everything they did was like a group decision.
In your piece, you said that Daniel Costa, thank you. You said that he was being considered, or at least seemed like he'd be a likely candidate for Johnny Ive's old VP of industrial design position once Johnny Ive vacated it, but he didn't get it. And as you were about to say, I think we didn't mention Daniel Costa has left for GoPro to become the VP of industrial design for GoPro. Do you think that perhaps he left because he wasn't offered this spot that he maybe felt he was most suited for? And second, part two, do you think that him leaving the Apple design team is going to, I don't know, significantly impact the team in any way?
Well, the first part is that he was he was described as Johnny's right-hand man. And the guy that did get the job, Richard Howarth, who was also hired around the same time and was also a super important designer there, you know, it's emerged that he actually was Johnny's right-hand man. And he was the one who actually drove a lot. I think he was the lead designer on a lot of the iPhones, if not all of them. So his star rose. I think, you know, Costa was the early right-hand man, and I think Richard Howarth ended up taking that role, which is why he eventually got the job. And it's pure speculation because no one has said anything about this. But, you know, the first thing I thought when I saw the news is, oh, okay, you know, like, this is the guy that got passed over who felt that maybe he should have been the new head of the design studio. You know, and now he's taking that job at a different company. The weird thing I thought was, like, GoPro. You know, because all I've been reading about GoPro is doom and gloom.
Really? I haven't heard anything bad about them. I don't follow them closely.
Yeah, me neither. But, you know, every time they've been in the news, it's about their stock tanking. They laid off 7% of their workforce. They seem to be like the whole action camera market is now really crowded. You know, it used to be just GoPro, but now everyone does them. Sony, Panasonic, everybody. You know, I think it's kind of like they grew so quickly that it's difficult to maintain that. And they're kind of like a one product company.
It's kind of a niche product too. Right. Not everyone wants a GoPro.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many extreme snowboarders do you know?
Well, my son bought one. He really wanted one, you know, and he got one for Christmas and then it sat in a drawer for like 2 years till he sold it.
Really?
I think that's where most of them are. And if you look at their products, like they have so many accessories and out of the box is like a million different bits and pieces of waterproof.
Yeah, they're not expensive either.
No, so it kind of looked like it was but you know, I was kind of surprised. It was not the sort of, I don't know, I'd heard that this is a company that was in trouble. And of course, you know, if you're competing against phones now, I mean, Samsung's already made its phones waterproof And the iPhone 7 is widely rumored to be waterproof too. And with all this slow motion, and you can control it from your Apple Watch, you know, so you have a remote control function, you can set this thing up and it will record you. I don't know, you know, like it looks like they got a hard, they got a hard, hard market to compete in with all the
smartphones. Yeah, especially because you can buy cases for the iPhone that make it virtually indestructible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And add pretty much all of the accessories that you would want on a GoPro camera, just, you know, bolted onto your iPhone.
Right.
So, and then you have a beautiful screen to look at. You can edit everything right there on the actual phone itself.
Right, and share it and everything.
So I kind
of
see your point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of reasons.
So, so do you think that his departure is going to have a negative impact on Apple?
Well, they got a deep bench, you know. It would be, it's kind of like, I don't know, I was going to think of a sports analogy, like Klay Thompson, you know, leaving the Warriors, right? He's one of the key players, but they still have Curry and all the other guys. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It, what I was worried about, the other thing that I sort of worried about is like, could this be the sort of beginning of the dissolution of the team? Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's no signs there yet. I think because there's plenty of other guys that have also been passed over. Chris Stringer, who was also one of the lead iPhone designers and the iPad designer, he I think was one of the contenders for that job as well. The job that Richard Howarth has now got. Daniel Delius, he was there. He's a good friends with Johnny. They used to commute together in Johnny's Aston Martin for like, you know, for a good decade or more. Bart Andre, he has the most patents there of anybody. He's been involved, super involved in a whole bunch of different products.
He has more patents than what's his face? I can't remember this guy's name for the life of me. What's
Danny Coster,
name?
Yeah.
He has more. Oh, there we go. He has more patents than Daniel Coster. Because didn't you say Daniel Coster has 600 patents to his name?
I think it's more now. I didn't check the latest numbers, but yeah, there's more than 600 patents. Yeah, because they patent. You know, it means something and it doesn't really mean anything. You know, because everything they do, they patent every idea.
I wonder if this guy makes money off those patents though. If he leaves the company,
no. They're all licensed to Apple. It's all Apple intellectual property. They're patents are strange things. You know, the press treat them like, you know, roadmaps. And sometimes in retrospect, you can go back and you can see that these patents were actually indicative of some of the stuff they're up to. But they patent every cockamamie idea. And a lot of it is really a legal, you know, defense strategy. So when they get into a fight with someone like Samsung over ripping off, you know, their designs, and they often use this as like legal ammunition and cross license to each other or whatever, you know, or threaten Samsung to try to get out of the market. But look what good it's done. None. Anyway, you know, Bart Andre, I think, is one of the long timers, the veterans, and, you know, all these guys. But you don't know being able to lead a team is very different from being a talented designer. And a different set of skills, and there was a lot of talk when Jobs died. You know, like, why isn't Johnny Ive, if he's so important, why isn't he the CEO? You know,
well, I kind of thought he'd make a great fit for it.
Well,
myself.
It's because it's a different kind of job, you know, and all he wants to do and all he's ever wanted to do was design, and so being the head of, and now being chief, you know, design architect or whatever it is, his new job is actually perfect because he has no day to day people who report to him. He doesn't have to do any management stuff.
He's got like the best job,
right?
Besides the guy who does all like the trees at Apple campus,
yeah, right.
Like, the arborist, like Johnny Ive has the best jobs.
Except the arborist doesn't get to travel, you know, in a private Learjet like Johnny Ive, in a Gulfstream like Johnny Ive does, or get shoved around.
Instead, right, that's true. But instead, you're just walking around a beautiful campus, listening to the birds sing. Yeah. You know, feeding them seeds, cutting a few branches here and there, watering, right. Listening to your iPod. That's that guy's life. Yeah. And he gets paid like 800 grand a year probably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's probably on the roof with a pair of binoculars, right? And he's directing all these giant cranes where to put these things.
Yeah, at the moment, that's probably what he's helping with. So moving on to Johnny Ive, you're talking about Johnny Ive commuting in his Aston Martin and 18 months or so ago, he gave up his own car and is being chauffeured around in this very fancy Bentley. And I thought you had an interesting theory as to why he may be doing this. What were you thinking?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, your first reaction is, oh, my goodness, you know, like this is the lifestyles.
He's just too busy.
Right, of a 1%. Yeah.
Well, it's impossible to drive and spread the Grey Poupon on your crackers, right. So you need a driver.
I was looking at the gallery. That it's a Mulsanne, I think you pronounce it, Bentley Mulsanne, and he has a couple of these. He had one white one, one black one. He may have more now.
Sure, why not? You're Johnny Ive. Yeah.
Well, this is also on top of the Aston Martins he has, you know, and he has an Aston Martin Vantage, which is like a 12-cylinder, I think, V12 supercar.
So he's really into cars.
He's really, really into cars, and he's really, really into driving. And he always has been, you know, like since he wanted to be a car designer, and he mm-hmm. interviewed, he went down to see some car design colleges in the UK. And he said, the quote is kind of funny. He told The Observer years ago that he thought the other kids were too weird. They're always making vroom, vroom sounds while they were drawing their cars. And I think that was a joke because I think he had a genuine and sincere interest in being a car designer. But he ended up going to Newcastle instead to study industrial design. And probably a wiser choice because, you know, it's a wider, it's more, you know, horizontal. Like he got to learn a bunch of different skills, not just car skills. And I think it's really hard to become a star designer in the car industry. Really, really hard.
Well, yeah. I mean, how many cars are designed each year and how many of them have any sort of prestige, right? Like most of them are like the Hyundais and the Hondas. And
right, exactly. Yeah. And there's not many, you know, sort of star designers anymore that have become household names.
Right. Well, he might become a car designer anyway,
looks
right?
Like he's, yeah, looks like he's realizing that ambition, which is exactly why I think he's getting chauffeured around because there was an interesting the news that he had a chauffeur was came from that big long New Yorker profile, the 17,000 word profile that came out. I think it was earlier this year, right? So there was one line in there that he now has a chauffeur, and the line was that he reluctantly agreed to have a chauffeur to have a driver, and you're like, what? Reluctantly agreed? Like, whose idea was it then? That he, you know,
that's a great point. Yeah. And of course, if you like to drive, why would you give that up? I mean, to me, that indicated that he was just so busy he didn't have time to drive himself around.
Exactly. Yeah. I guess that's true. Right. Yeah. So he can answer emails and work in the back of the car, which may be.
But if you really like to drive, I mean, you would probably hold that time in your car driving as holy. You know, you wouldn't want to be doing those things while you're driving.
Right. It gives you a chance to listen to music, to talk, to, you know, to do something else, to get away from work. And he commuted down 280 to from San Francisco to Cupertino, a drive I've made many, many times. It's a beautiful drive. It's not actually that much traffic on that freeway. It's like it's hardly ever clogged. It gets clogged a bit in the morning, I think. But if you go early enough or late enough, you know, then you miss the traffic. And yeah, he did that for 20 years or more.
Wow.
So I think and look at all the cars. He's taking cross-country trips in his Aston Martin with his dad. He almost died in an accident in his Aston Martin, like on that commute. Yeah,
wow.
A few years ago, got into a really bad accident. Yeah,
I think we're taking the scenic route to your theory here.
Let's touch it out a bit more. Anyway,
so why did you think he was? Why do you think he's being chauffeured around?
Well, because I think he's. I honestly think he's getting the experience of a driverless car.
Right.
I think this is part of his. The research process that they put into all the new products. I think this is getting, you know, a feel for what it would be like if you didn't have to drive anymore. Mm-hmm. What would it be like? You know, what would you do? What were the kind of things that you'd want? You know,
how would you speak to the car? Maybe,
maybe, I don't know. Do you think that's the guy?
I mean, I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
If you wanted to go to somewhere and the car didn't know or your driver doesn't know, you have to you know, communicate with him in some way.
Right.
And so maybe he's getting a feel for, how do those interactions look?
Right. Yeah. Could be.
I think it's a really smart theory. I mean, especially when you take into account that he, as you said, reluctantly agreed to be chauffeured around. It could be something as simple as him just not having a lot of time. But everyone knows Apple's working on a car and odds are it's going to be driverless. And so how else would you get experience as Apple's, you know, head designer, chief designer? How else would you get experience in the everyday operations of using a driverless car when they don't exist?
Right.
You would have to have a driver.
Right. Exactly. There you go. I rest my case.
That's a great point that I just made for you. Yeah. So what we need to do then is we need to somehow figure out how to apply to be a driver for Johnny Ive so we can learn all his secrets.
That's a great idea. Well, you know, I reckon the rest of the design team must be doing it too, if he's doing it.
Now that is a good question. I wonder if any of them are getting driven around.
Well, then I thought, they're probably just doing Uber, right? Which is the same thing.
That's right.
And a lot cheaper. In fact, Uber is probably a closer analogy than getting because you'd call it with an app, right? Or the Apple Watch. You know, I think in a way, Uber's already kind of a preview of what we're going to be seeing with the Apple Car.
Yeah. I mean, you could literally just take the driver out of that scenario and have the car drive itself, and all of a sudden you have an Uber.
Yeah,
driverless car.
Yeah, but it's a lot more, no embarrassing small talk. No trying to be polite. Yeah. No pretend to fumble for some change to give the guy a tip and then realizing, oh, no, you don't have to tip the guy.
And then scooting out without tipping him awkwardly. Although you tip in the app, I think. I don't think you actually ever use cash.
Right.
Well, I think that's a really interesting theory. Speaking of Apple Car news. So did you peruse this Car and Driver
report? Peruse. I read it. Slogged through it.
Did you watch the video?
I didn't.
Okay, that's probably a good thing. unless you're really dying to take a nap, it actually might be good material to go over. So what did you think about this horrendous-looking piece of garbage they sketched up as the Apple Car?
There's a lot of cool renderings on the web, right? Some people have done some cool, cool stuff. They went to the college in Pasadena.
The something car design school, and right. I'm like,
this is just
you should not, if you were the dean of this college, you should not be showing this video as an advertisement of what your students are going to be able to accomplish.
This is the staff there, and they had they interviewed a couple of people who were like top designers and people who were consulting with the other companies. Yeah, that rendering they made, that and the ideas were terrible. They were really amateurish, and they had this group of designers and experts sitting around. You know, what kind of idea did they come up with? They had like CarPlay in the door, and then some hideous street view up on the screen.
It was the Homer car. Did you see the episode of The Simpsons where they let Homer Simpson design his own car? That's literally. Just imagine it was very bulbous. It had like, it looked like a jet car. Yeah. With like a huge dome on the top of it, and that's essentially what this car is. I was looking at this thing, and my favorite part was their headline was, "Is this the Apple Car?" Right, as though they made it seem as though they had a scoop to draw everyone in, right. And then you go in, and sure enough, it's like no, they asked these students at this college to basically just come up with what they thought the Apple Car might look like based upon no evidence whatsoever. Right. And then they had a panel
and a panel of people who sat for 30 minutes, brainstormed the dumbest ideas, and they used that for the basis of their speculation. Yeah, it was crazy.
Dump is the most appropriate word.
Nothing insightful or interesting there, except the very last couple of paragraphs. They mentioned a hire that Apple had made that I actually missed. I didn't see this piece of news because it actually broke, I think, a couple of months ago. This kid that they do digital license plates. And they were saying that if they were speculating about a shared car, like if you had a driverless car that you shared with other people, this thing would, go park itself or drive around or take other people on errands. And then it would come, when it was free, it would come pick up somebody else. And it was this company that this kid worked for has developed a license plate that changes depending on who's in the vehicle.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I thought, that's actually kind of that. That's a good point. You know, that might, especially if there's a handoff, if someone could drive the car as well as turn it over to driverless, that would make it interesting. That was the only thing in the whole thing that was news to me and was actually hard that, gave me something to think about.
I'll post a link to this video on YouTube. They had a panel of people sitting around talking about this Apple Car. You know, but it's a fake car. It's an apparition. It's one that they created themselves, and they're talking about this thing as though it could be real. It's one of the strangest videos I've seen this year, and everyone in it looks like they're about to fall asleep. Like, it was like they were instructed before they began, when you're talking about this, please do not change the pitch of your voice or the volume under any circumstances. You must speak in a monotone the entire video. You'll be immediately ejected from this meeting.
They're making a big deal out of it too. I think they have a panel in LA.
You got to be kidding me!
Yeah, and they invited Lewis down to go talk at it.
they are touting this thing as though they have this major scoop. It's so bizarre. Yeah. But it would be like if I, at this very moment, like just drew what I thought the Apple car would look like and we posted it on Cultimac as though we had some major scoop.
There's a picture in there. They actually did that. Someone drew this kind of this, an apple. It looks like an apple of, you know, the fruit.
With wheels on it.
Is this the Apple car?
I'm going to draw a giant banana with wheels, and we'll put the headline, is this the Apple car with three question marks afterwards, right. Just to really...
You come just as close.
That's right. And then we'll have a panel. We'll record the whole thing. It's going to be very professional. Actually, it's going to be huge on the internet. Okay, well, definitely go check out that video if you've been suffering from insomnia. I'll make sure I post it in the show notes. Let's talk about the Apple Watch a little bit, Leander. So I posted a link to an LA Times article. Actually, I take that back. It's a QZ.com article about the Apple Watch. And the headline was, a year after its launch, it's now clear that pretty much no one needs an Apple Watch. And we've had our Apple Watches a year now. We've talked about it before. But let me read you a couple of tidbits from this article. And also, we have a question from a listener. And I thought we could talk a little bit more about the Apple Watch now that we've been using it for a year. So in this article, they say, the Apple Watch released on April 24th. 2015, so it's been almost exactly a year. It's become apparent that there really isn't much need to get one. Some argue that it was the product that would give us the insight into the future of Apple. A year later, that direction appears to be very boring. Every Apple product in the last 15 years has been two things, desirable and useful. They've made it easier for people to be creative, listen to music on the go, and communicate with people. Or they have been very desirable, you know, like jewelry. And he kind of makes the argument in this piece that the Apple Watch isn't really a cool fashion piece. People aren't buying it to be fashionable. And it's not really super useful. It really hasn't found its place in the lineup of Apple products yet. What do you think about this criticism? You think that this has any teeth? It's been kind of controversial. People have been tweeting me a lot and were being like, oh, you don't need it, but that doesn't mean it's not an important product. And I'm playing devil's advocate here, so I want to know what you think.
I think it's like a lot of Apple products, that it's going to mature into something that's going to be really, really useful, maybe even indispensable. Mm-hmm. I think it's for a version one, for the first version of the product, I think, yeah, it's a remarkable device. And it's not universal yet, but I think that there is the potential. And didn't we discuss this before?
we've discussed this a bunch. Yeah.
I love that because it's always the same reaction. I remember, when the iPod came out, the first original iPod, it was big as a brick. It was $500. It only works with Macs. So you had to have a FireWire Mac to get all your songs across. And people would focus, and iTunes was it wasn't opened up. It wasn't an open platform. At the time, Microsoft was licensing its music software to everybody and anybody. And that was the consensus amongst industry watchers, is that the open licensing was the way to go, and that Apple would be doomed. And, they weren't looking at the magical, experience that you could have if you had an iPod, that amazing time when the thing was on shuffle and it would play just the perfect song, and your life was going to the shop was cinematic. Even commuting to work, being on the bus was suddenly a cinematic experience. It was completely transformative.
Yeah, it's very true.
And I think the same. I don't know if the same is true of the Apple Watch. It hasn't made my life wonderful, but I definitely miss it. I constantly keep on. When I had it charging this morning, I left it at home and went out to do some stuff. And I kept on looking at my wrist to see, the time. But also, it's actually really useful for a whole bunch of different things in my life now. And I really rely on it for reminders, alarms, directions, a whole bunch of notifications, just glancing down to see who's texting me, what emails come in. I look at it, far more frequently than I do anything at any other screen in my life. And I really notice it when I don't have it on.
As an experiment, I have not been wearing it every day. And I wouldn't say that I miss it when I don't have it on, but I definitely do notice. Because for a lot of the reasons that you just said, especially the notifications and some of the alarms and dictation and stuff. So once you have one, it is definitely useful, in my opinion. But I don't think that it's one of those essential devices like an iPad or a Mac or an iPhone is. And I think people keep comparing it to those devices, maybe unfairly. As you said, it's a Generation 1 product. And I want to read you this tweet from this is a great Twitter username, AC Slater. 017. That means nothing to you, right, Leander? AC Slater.
I don't know. What is that reference?
Okay, you were gonna say it's a Saved by the Bell reference. Okay. I think, yeah, that's right, because we did a Mr. Belding intro for you one time, and you were like, I don't know what that means. Mr. Belding. He says, as exciting as the first iPhone was to demo, it took four generations to go mainstream beyond that guy status, you know, where you're like that guy who has the new cool technology. I think that's a really fair point, is we compare these things to the iPhone, and the iPhone has had a long time to mature and does a lot more than it used to do. I mean, when it was a V1 product, there wasn't even an app store available on it yet. All you could do is make calls, browse the web, and, you know, send text messages and stuff. It was much more like, you know, the cell phones of its time than the device that we know now. With all the cool app functionality and stuff. So I think it's going to take time for the Apple Watch to mature. And I think in 3 or 4 years, the Apple Watch is going to be a very cool product. But will it be a critical product for everyone?
It is.
That's going to depend a lot on what happens with HomeKit, I think.
Yeah, right, and a lot of other things. Like, you know, a huge fan of Amazon Echo, right? Love being able to call out to the Echo. Hey, you know.
You were like Echo's number one fan. In fact, I'm thinking about buying one just because you talk about it so highly
all
the time.
I'm not even the number one fan. You should talk about Lewis. Lewis is the number one fan. He loves the Echo. He went and bought one straight away after we had one here in the office, and he's had it at home, and him and his wife use it for everything, and they're chatting away to that thing 24/7.
I heard that he puts a wig on it and lipstick and sometimes takes it on dates.
Exactly. Pops in the front seat in a restaurant, candlelit.
Sometimes when his wife is out of town.
Yeah, right. Hey, Echo.
He's like, sing me a song, Echo, from Spotify, to like puts on like
right, Barry White. That's exactly right.
Okay, so let me read you this email we got from listener Frankie Rumer. I think this lines up perfectly with this Apple Watch topic. He writes in, please help. I have been stuck on the fence about something for a while. I need your trusted guidance. Oh, trusted guidance. Thank you, Frankie. I have always wanted an Apple Watch, but I've always avoided it because of A, money issues. That's a good reason. B, being afraid of being an early adopter. The question is, do I give in to my urge and accept the watch for what it is, a sexy-looking piece of design and a great iPhone sidekick? Or do I be smart and wait to see if the future product evolves into something more rational? Note, he says, these are the exact emotions I was going through when the first iPhone came out, and I waited all the way until the 3GS. So did I, Frankie. I did the same thing. So what do you think, Leander? We're on V1. I've heard V2. We've heard mixed reviews, or mixed rumors, I should say. Some people say it's going to be 40% thinner than it is now. Ming-Chi Kuo recently said it's going to be pretty much exactly the same as the Apple Watch we have now, except there's going to be some minor improvements. Do you think now is a good time to buy the Apple Watch?
No, if you're on the if you haven't got one already, no. Wait till the next one comes out. And it's funny, isn't it? With what people concentrate on, you know, like the sort of like the hardware specs, the speeds, the feeds, and what really counts is the experience. You know, the what it's going to do.
Right.
I think you know. I mean, who cares? It's got a faster chip. Except that it'll make things like Siri, hopefully, better, you know, more responsive and quicker. But, you know, I think that's it. I think the interface for the watch is going to be speech. And I think that it's going to eventually turn into what I've heard people describe as like a mouse cursor for the real world. So it becomes like a remote control and a trigger for all these things around you. So that it's like, you know, it's like a mouse cursor on a screen, a 2D screen. You know, you click on something, a link, a button, something happens. The watch is like that in 3D in the real world. You know, a good example is like you come home and it detects the rust on your wrist. It knows who you are. It opens the door. It says the heating, you know, puts on some Barry White, that kind of stuff.
Oh,
you know,
all
the different. But I think other examples are, you know, probably there's probably more useful stuff than that kind of home automation stuff, which I always think is kind of like prosaic and not that interesting. But, you know, knowing what, if you have a car, you know, the car will come to you. You can say, hey, you know, come pick me up. And that would be all you have to do. the watch knows where you are in real space with GPS or whatever, you know?
I think but you could argue that you would be able to do all that stuff with your iPhone.
You can, but I think the world's going to look very different in 5 or 10 years. And I think like having something strapped to your body that's for these kind of interactions with all the this smart technology around you is what it's going to be for.
Yeah.
More so than the phone. The phone, I think the phone's going to look like a desktop computer, really.
You think
so? Yeah, I think the watch is going to become the laptop to the phone, which will become the, you know, you'd love your desktop.
You'll have a tiny little keyboard.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what I'm saying? It's like the computing power is getting smaller and smaller. And, you know, the same way that people have ditched desktops now for laptops and or iPads or even their iPhone, I think the same thing that the watch is going to take over a whole bunch of functions for the phone. So that it'll be like, oh, yeah. You know, I mean, people are already doing it, aren't they? Why would I want to fish my phone out to do that? You know, I can just do it on my watch. And that's increasingly going to be true.
Yeah, I don't fish. My watch does a lot of cool stuff. I mean, it assists in a lot of things that my phone already does, but I wouldn't say it replaces anything except for the actual watch function. That's the only thing I would say has replaced my phone.
Maybe messages,
but the apps on the Apple Watch are terrible.
Well, I just found
Let me just say, I wonder if they're going to improve eventually, because I think one of the big problems is you can't have complicated interactions on a screen size that is that small. So I wonder if the apps are ever going to be very useful, because you just can't really do very much on that small screen.
Yeah, it's a totally different paradigm. They've got to be completely redesigned. The same way that, you know, multi-touch and the iPhone and the iPad, you know, completely redesigned a whole bunch of, you know, apps for the computer and made them completely different. The same thing is going to happen with the watch. And I don't think people have made that sort of mental leap yet. I just download Facer, which is it puts a different picture on your watch face every time you go to look at it. So, you know, kind of small beans, but absolutely great. You know, totally amazing.
Like what kind of pictures?
Well, I set it it downloads all these space pictures from NASA. So
did you say it was called Spacer?
Well, it's called Facer, Facer.
Okay. Okay.
And it's a really clever hack. You know, it uses you can set your watch face to be any album in your photo library.
Right.
And they put a new album into your library that can be set to, you know, your Instagram feed or someone else's Instagram feed, the company's Instagram feed. It could be space pictures from NASA. It could be pictures of animals or landscapes. Once you choose that gallery, it downloads and serves up new pictures every time you turn your watch up to look at it, and it puts in the background. So there's a limitation. It uses that one watch face that Apple has enabled with pictures. But you know, I love it. It's every time you look at the watch, it's like some jaw dropping picture of the cosmos.
I'm gonna have to check that out. Yeah. That's actually a really good idea.
I think it's lovely, and loads of times I've you know, showed my son or my wife like look at this. She's like, whatever. But the kids are into it. It's like a small glimpse at like, you know, of something that really this is the 21st century timepiece.
Yeah, even just switching it so that your watch uses your regular photo albums is actually really very cool, because it shows you images that you may not look at very often. So you're constantly getting to revisit photos that you take that you never really look at. So this is kind of a cool extension of that. My take on Frankie's question: definitely wait till version 2. Absolutely, I would not buy one now. We're so close to an update that at the very least I would do that. And then wait and see what version 2 looks like. If it's a lot like this one, at least you're getting that price drop. So they drop the price of each version of the Apple Watch, $50, if you guys didn't know. And I think that's much more easy to swallow, because if I had to pay $400 and something, I think I paid $440 for this after tax. I don't think I would pay that again. But if it were like $385, like that's much easier on the wallets, and I'm like, okay, for $385, it doesn't really have as much functionality as I want, but it is a cool thing. It's a cool accessory to have with your iPhone. So I think the consensus is, Frankie, definitely wait until version 2 and see how you like it at that point. And then it does do a lot of cool stuff. It's not like you're so early that you're getting an incomplete device. and you're going to be really super disappointed. I think you're going to be happy with it. I think this is going to be a slowly evolving piece of technology, at least, you know, for the next generation. I don't think we're going to see massive changes. Okay, Leander, let's wrap up with the stuff that we're into.
I just told you, didn't I? I should have saved it.
What are you into?
Facer, oh, Facer? Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that actually, we can do that. So you want me just to tell you what I'm into
then? Yeah, let's cut it out short. So,
that way we can wrap it up. We're running a little bit long, as we sometimes do on this show. So have you ever heard the term EDC?
EDC?
Yeah, EDC.
No.
Everyday carry. Okay. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, I do. I've heard of it.
You do? Yeah. Okay. So I've really been getting into EDC, which is everyday carry, which is carrying a pocket knife with you everywhere you go. Which, for some reason, in my mind, seems to be a very nerdy thing to do.
Yeah,
like, I thought it was. Isn't it? Don't you think it's kind of dorky?
Is it more than just carrying a pocket knife? I thought it was all about. So it's a kind of survivalist type thing, right?
Well, yes, I think that there's probably more to EDC than just the pocket knife. But for me, I have always had this strange attraction to pocket knives.
Yeah, me too. I totally understand. Yeah.
Have you really?
Yeah. I know. I love them. I've got a collection of them.
Do you really? This is hilarious.
Stupid knives, and I buy them.
I can't either. I don't know why. Yeah. and you know, it's like I get them, and I don't even use them for anything. I keep telling myself, well, maybe I need to carry it around more. So I put this thing in my pocket, and everywhere I go, I have like a 3 or 4 inch blade with me. And I tell myself, well, someday I'm going to be in a situation where I have, like, someone's like, quick, I need someone to cut this twine for me.
Yeah, skin this deer.
Yeah, I need someone to please gut this fish for me. I'm going to be like, move aside. I'm going to flip open my knife and I'm going to save the day. So I've been carrying this knife with me now for probably 2 or 3 weeks, and I have not used it once. Not once. It's in my pocket all the time, and I still don't use it. And I have like 3 different very expensive knives now. I have a Kershaw, like little flip knives. So you can flip it open really easily. It's like a speed blade.
Yeah. I've got a.
You have one of those too.
I don't know what brand it is, but it's like that. Yeah. So what do they call it? Assisted. It's like a flick knife, but it's assisted. Not quite.
Yeah,
a flick
it's assisted.
Knife, right. It's a flick knife under a different name because they're illegal.
Well, switchblades are illegal. But this one has like a flip assist. It has like a piece of steel on the back of the blade. So you press it down, the blade flips up.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Yeah.
And super cool to play with. And, you know, like you can look real cool just like flossing your teeth on the bus when you're driving, you know, if you got one of these things. And, of course, it has only the best quality steel. You know, I never in my life cared about steel whatsoever. Didn't know anything about steel. And now all of a sudden I find myself being somewhat of a steel snob. You know, so like when I'm buying a knife, I'm like, oh, what kind of steel is this made with? I don't want that cheap, you know, Chinese steel. I need to have like the cool Sweden steel.
Yeah, well, all of a sudden now you want, you know, Viking steel forged.
Yeah, only the best Viking steel from the core of the earth is where my steel needs to come from. And I have this other beautiful Spyderco knife. These things are made in Colorado. They're gorgeous knives. And it's like, you know, overall, it's like a 6.5-inch blade. And I don't use these things ever.
6.5-inch blade.
Oh, it's just makes me feel like a man.
I go the other way. I try to find the smallest practical pocket knife. You know, like something you can really carry.
Well, you can carry both of these.
Okay, but they're huge. I mean, I got something on my my keychain.
Yeah,
that, is actually really useful. My granddad used to carry a knife. I got it from my granddad because my granddad had a little tiny pocket knife everywhere he went, and it was he really did use it. You know, like he'd dig out. Thorns he'd peel apples for everybody, and like lunch was often a piece of was cheese with apple, and so he would slice, you know, a piece of cheese and then slice a piece of apple, peel it and everything like that. It was like he totally used this knife all the time, and he was super into sharpening pencils. He was an artist, right? So he'd always sharpen his pencils.
He'd sharpen his pencils with his knife
beautifully as well.
Now that's a real man.
Beautifully. He used it all the time, you know, and it put this idea in my head that it was a, you know, an essential piece of kit that you had to have. And I definitely used mine. I got a little tiny Gerber one, and it goes on my keychain. It's a small blade. It's probably not more than like 3/4 of an inch, maybe an inch long. Mm-hmm. And I do use it all the time.
You actually do use yours. See, because mine has turned itself. Mine is a glorified Amazon box opener. The only time I actually end up using a knife is when I need to open a box, and I never think to cut food with it or skin a snake with it. Those kinds of things never occur to me when I'm just out and about.
Yeah, well, I haven't eaten with it, but I use it opening boxes and stuff like that all the time. I don't know. There's quite often reasons why you want to cut something, isn't there? Not that I can think of anything now.
I had a friend of mine hand me his knife when he wanted me to open a box for him, and he handed me this just cheap Chinese-made knife. It was all flimsy, and the blade wasn't even sharp. You could run it across your finger, and it wouldn't even cut you. And I found myself judging him slightly in my mind. That's how much of a snob I've become. I was like, what is this piece of garbage that you've given to me? And I handed it back to him. And then that was my opportunity to be like, that ain't a knife.
Yeah, right. So which
bust out my giant Spyderco.
Which is the one? Is it called a Spyderco?
Spyderco. I think it's a Spyderco Manix. And they're glorious knives. Beautiful. Expensive, but gorgeous.
Oh,
super
yeah.
sharp. And they make a bunch of different kinds of knives, and they're all really good looking, super solid, very, very good tools. And they all end up being box openers for
me. Yeah. Well, the last time I used my knife, I almost cut my finger off with another knife.
Did you really?
This is just three, four days ago. I was trying to open the packaging on this big kitchen knife. Mm-hmm. That we got,
yeah,
and I couldn't get the damn thing open. I was like yanking at it, so I got out my other knife, and then when I'm holding it in my hand, it was open enough for the blade to be exposed, and to get a better grip on it, I held it tighter and ended up cutting really deep cut.
Oh,
finger, it was horrific, really horrific.
Did you have to go to the hospital?
Well, I just put a Band-Aid on it. It was fine.
You just rub some mud on it, call it good. Yeah. Because we're EDC men. We don't need to go to the hospital.
There was blood everywhere. I was totally toughing it out. It was my wife and some were horrified because there was a lot of blood. There was blood everywhere.
Jeez.
But and all over the new knife too. That we had to clean up.
Well, that's a great way to welcome it to its new home, to christen it, so to speak.
Well, that was
put your own blood on it.
This is a kitchen knife that I was trying to get out of its packaging, and I was trying to open it with my other little knife. The I found it. It's called the Gerber Curve keychain tool.
The Gerber Curve.
And it has a flathead screwdriver, a Phillips screwdriver, and then some kind of, I don't know, horse shoeing.
horse hoof shoeing yeah, attachments. Right. I mean, hey, you need one of those in case.
But it has a tiny little bottle opener at the other end, and I hate to admit, but that was what I used it mostly for.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Now I know why it was EDC. That's Leander's EDC right there.
A lot of Stellas have been there.
A lot of Stellas died at the end of that.
But it's only 12, that bottle it's opener. 12 bucks, and it's really been the most useful knife I've ever had. It's a great, great little knife.
Both of my knives are $100 plus, and I'm trying to stop myself. There are some deal sites out there that sell knives, and I keep seeing these new ones for $110, $130, and again, I'm strangely compelled to buy these knives, and I know I'm not going to have a use for them. They're just going to open boxes in my house. And yeah, it's sometimes hard.
They're beautiful objects,
though,
aren't they, really? It's the engineering, the materials, the precision.
Yes, there's a craftsmanship to it. And when you get a really nice blade, I'm not even going to call it a knife. Now it's a blade. When you get a finely crafted blade, you feel a bit like a warrior.
I don't like all the sort of culture around the knives, though. Do you? That's what I find that really off-putting.
Yeah, I don't necessarily care for it either. And I'm not into killing bucks and stuff with it. Maybe, I mean, they probably actually have a use for a knife. Unlike us, who use it to open our beers and open our Amazon boxes. Yeah, right. Yeah. Those are the real men. We're just playing in their world. Okay, well, thought I'd share my strange little obsession with you guys because it's becoming unmanageable, and I'll probably soon have a whole wall full of knives that I never actually use. Okay, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the cool casts we have for you guys this week. If you want to come tell us about your blades, Make sure you're following us on Twitter. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Leander's L. Caney. Make sure you're following Cult of Mac for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. You know what I've really been wanting to do with my knife that I haven't had the courage yet?
Trim your nails?
Kill a man. It's the ultimate
right,
game.
That's what the everyday carry thing is about, isn't it?
That's right. I just want to like, I want to have it in my teeth as I emerge from the water.
Right, exactly.
And maybe just like grab some animal and just, next thing you know, I got dinner.
So that's what the fantasy is all about. Can you imagine skinning an animal though?
It'd be terrible. It'd be horrible.
All I want to use it for is opening up the cellophane on the packaging.
That's right.
Nice big packet of mincemeat.
That's as far as I want to go too. I'm like, someone hands me a fish that's gutted. I'm like, ew! And I'm like holding it by the tail. As I have this massive knife in my belt buckle.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly.